Record.
Okay, welcome back to Malachim Aleph, and we're learning Perek Hey. Last week we did all of Perek Dalet. This week we'll do about half of Perek Hey, and then we'll get to the other half of Mirsa Hashem next week. Okay, so we're talking about, of course, Shlomo HaMelech and Shlomo's reign, Shlomo's kingdom, and we begin with, again, descriptions of how much Shlomo ruled over everyone and everything around him. Ushlomo haya moshe b'chol ha-mamlachos min ha-nahar eretz plishtim ve'ad gevul mitzrayim. So Shlomo ruled over all of the kingdoms from the river of the Eretz Plishtim. Some say this is the Euphrates River, whatever it is. Ve'ad gevul mitzrayim, all the way until the borders of Mitzrayim. Magishim mincha ve'ovdim es Shlomo kol yimei chayim. So all of these nations, Magishim Mincha, they would give him gifts. They would send him offerings and gifts to Shlomo. The Ovdim es Shlomo kol yimei chayim, and they served him. And they served him. What does that mean? They served him. So the Mitzudah Sabbath says they pay taxes. All of these nations, all the way from the land of the Plishtim down to Mitzrayim, everyone nearby served him. They gave him taxes. They gave him gifts. And this was, says the Radak, because they were afraid of him. And we'll see a little bit more about this in a moment. And again, remember that right away, Shlomo, as soon as he took office, so to speak, he got rid of all of his opponents, and all of the other nations around were nervous. They were afraid, and therefore they gave him offerings. They gave him gifts. They wanted to keep him happy. They paid taxes to him. And that's what they did. It says Ad Gevul Mitzrayim. Could be. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. Yeah. I guess so. Yeah. Is that one of the women that one of the wives that we listed?
Yeah.
Paro's daughter?
That was like a strategic
strategic move, right? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, because his malchus was so great, that also led to an increase in the number of mouths he had to feed. Remember, we talked about this also in the previous perek. He had a lot of people to feed, and it wasn't a burden upon him or upon Bnei Yisrael because of all these presents that all the foreign nations sent him. And in fact, Bnei Yisrael also had an abundance due to all of these gifts. Pasuk Beis, Vayhi lechem Shlomo liyom echad. For one day, the bread that Shlomo needed was shloshim kor soles v'shishim kor kemach, 30 kor of soles. Soles is fine flour. This was a very large amount. And 30 kor of kemach, which is plain regular flour. And again, this was for all the people that he fed. And says the Malbim, given the greatness of Shlomo, the wealth of Bnei Yisrael, and also the many people who came to visit him, which we'll talk about in a few moments, this was a very, it was a large amount, but it was an appropriate amount. Pasuk Gimel, Asara Bakar Bariyim, 10 healthy. Now, Bariyim means healthy, but Rashi says Bariyim doesn't just mean healthy, Bariyim means fat. And these were cows that were fattened up through feeding. The Esrim Bakar Ri'i, and 20 cows that were just grazing. They were fattened up by natural means, by grazing. Umeyatzon, and 100 sheep. Levad me ayol utzvivi achmor, uvarburim avusim. Aside from all of these other animals, ayol, the rams, tzvi, deer, gazelle, yachmor, all these other types of animals, uvarburim avusim. So you see all this, I mean, a tremendous amount of meat, right? A tremendous amount of meat here. Now, what's barburim? So we say it in the Zmiros, right? Barburim. Huh?
Barburim.
Barburim udagim, right. So what's the barburim? So the Targum Yonatan says it's some sort of fowl, but he doesn't exactly say what it is. So so some say that maybe it's based on where they were from. You know, that maybe that's the name, the location of where they're from. Others say it's other types of birds. Some type of bird was this barburim. But now when I saw that in the pasuk, it just triggered in my mind, Barburim v'dogim, like the Zemer. Pasuk Dalet, ki hu roda b'chol eivar ha-nahar, because he ruled. Now roda means he ruled almost with like an iron fist. B'chol eivar ha-nahar. Eivar ha-nahar is the east of the Jordan River, right? Eivar ha-nahar, across the river. Mitifsach, v'ad Azda, from Tifsach all the way down to Azda, b'chol malche eivar ha-nahar, all of the kings of Eivar ha-nahar, v'shalom hayolom mikol avarav misaliv. And he was at peace. He was at peace from all of the nations that surrounded him. Now these two places, Mitivtach v'ad Azda, so the Gemara says there's two different opinions. Some say Tifsach and Azda were right next to each other. And either way, the idea behind the pasuk is that he ruled over everywhere. So either Tifsach and Azda were right next to each other, and we're saying that he, just like he ruled over these two places, he ruled over everywhere else. Or Tifsach and Azda were very far apart from each other, and we're saying he ruled from Tifsach to Azda and everywhere in between. But the idea is the same, that he was ruling over everywhere. And again, all of these other nations, Eivar HaYarden, they would all constantly be sending him presents, right? There was a steady influx of animals, of offerings, of presents. And he needed this food because of all these people. And again, all these people used to come to him. Mitzvah Stavit says that the people whom he ruled over used to come visit. The people, he had treaties with some nations he didn't have treaties with, but he ruled over them. And either way, all these people used to come, used to visit, and used to bring gifts. Now, he had all of this. We'll see in a moment that he had a pretty great army. Okay, and the Malvin is going to talk about this. Let's see, Pasuk Hey. Vayeshev Yehuda v'Yisrael lavetach, and not just was everyone else at peace with him, but Bnei Yisrael themselves, Yehuda v'Yisrael. Yoshim lavetach. They were sitting peacefully. Ish tachas gafno v'sachas se'enoso. Famous words, right? Every man sat under his vine. Every man under his fig tree. Midon va'ad Beersheva, from the north of Eretz Yisrael to the south. Kol yimei Shlomo, all of the days of Shlomo. Everyone was at peace. Okay, no one had to run to flee their enemies. Right? It used to be people would plant a vineyard; they would have to run because the enemies were attacking. They didn't have to do that. Ish tachas gafno v'sachas einasa. They could stay put. Also, says the Malbim, there was no rebellion from within because everybody was happy, right? There was prosperity. Everybody was happy. When is there infighting and rebellion? When things are not so great. When things are not so great, so then everybody's pointing fingers. Everybody's infighting, right? They're fighting with each other. They're blaming the other one. They blame the other party. There were no parties. So everything was great. Everybody was wealthy. There were jobs. Everybody had what they needed. There were no enemies attacking. Things were fantastic. Everybody was comfortable. Yeah.
Rabbi, why such a great difference when David HaMelech became king and when Solomon became king? Tremendous difference.
Yes, that is true. That is true. You're saying, why did the Ribono Shel Olam orchestrate such a difference?
I guess so, yeah.
Hard to
people.
Yeah. I mean, my hunch, and again, this is just a guess, is that the second half of this perek, we're not going to learn about it so much tonight, but the second half of this perek really begins to discuss the groundwork for the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to talk about Hiram. We'll talk about some of the things that he sent, you know, to build the Beis HaMikdash. So we're really laying the groundwork for the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe in order to lay the groundwork for the Beis HaMikdash, we have to be in a certain place of prosperity, of peace, you know, in order to have the Beis HaMikdash. You know, we can't build the Beis HaMikdash with infighting, with people unhappy. We have to build the Beis HaMikdash, you know, on a high note. You know, listen, the Beis HaMikdash was around for many years, and things weren't always this peachy, but at least to build the Beis HaMikdash, maybe we had to be on a certain level, maybe. Okay, now, Pasuk Vav, Vayihi Shlomo arboim elef urvos susim. So Shlomo had 40,000. How do they translate urvos in the chariots? Okay, chariots. Stalls. Okay, 40,000 stalls of horses. Okay, all of them are far from grapple here with how to translate all these, you know, these words. Limer Kavo, for his chariots, right, for his chariot, Ushne Masar Elef Parashim, and 12,000 horsemen, right? Parashim, horsemen? How do they train? Yeah? Okay, horsemen, 12,000 horsemen. So they have 12,000 horsemen and 40,000 stalls of horses. It's a lot of horses, right? That's a lot of horses, okay? Now, what do you need all these horses for? Why does he need 12,000 horsemen, right? Now, you think about it, what does a king need horses and horsemen for? War, for an army, right? But he's not going to war. There's no one fighting. So the Malbim says, huh?
Maybe they were gifts.
Okay, maybe they were gifts. Maybe they were gifts, but we don't find necessarily that these things were gifts. We find that all the food was gifts, right? We don't find that the horses were gifts, and the horsemen, you know, those were Jews. Oh, very good. So the Malbim says he didn't need this great army. He didn't need this great force, right? But he had them in order to scare people, that people should know, listen, don't mess with Shlomo, because look at his great army. He's got 12,000 horsemen. He has 40,000 horses, right? Look at his army. You know, remember, in those days, horses and chariots, these were the tanks. Right? These were the tanks of those days. This is a large fleet. You don't mess with Shlomo. You know, so this way, everyone would be scared. And that's why, interestingly, you know, because the Mefarshim point out here that he's going against the Pasuk. The Radak says in Pasuk Vav, he's violating a Pasuk in the Torah. What does the Pasuk say in Devarim Pasha Shoftim? Rak lo yar lo susim. A king shouldn't have too many horses, right? Okay, then it talks about velo yoshev esam mitzrayim lo shemar har lo sus. Okay? Shouldn't have so many horses. Shlomo HaMelech has 40,000 horses. 40,000 stalls of horses. Might even be more than that. What does he need so many horses for? Right? So the Malbim says, this is why it was appropriate for him to have so many horses, because he was doing it in order to scare, in order to sow fear in the eyes of all of the nations around. Don't mess with Bnei Yisrael. Don't mess with Bnei Yisrael. Okay, so that's a good question. It's you know, we find that Shlomo went against also Lo Yaver Lo Nashin, and that got him into trouble, right? So here, the Malbim seems to say that this was, although this was against the Pasuk, you know, he had a good reason for doing it, and it sounds like that it wasn't such a terrible thing. Sounds like it wasn't such a terrible thing. The Radak also points out that, so the Radak doesn't understand this way. That's how the Malbim understands, right? These were really for war, and it was to scare everyone. Right? That's how the Malbim understands, and that's how he justifies it. And he says, based on that, that's why he ruled over the nations that he did. That's why even the nations that he did not rule over feared him, right? And that's why everyone was at peace. No one had to flee any enemies. There were no enemies. Everybody was scared stiff. The Radak doesn't understand this way. And the Radak says, one second, let's do a little math. There were 12,000 horsemen and 40,000 horses. That means he's got a lot of extra horses. Right? Even if all the horsemen would go to battle, he would have 28,000 horses sitting there doing nothing. Right? So says the Radak, these are all extra horses. What's the point of all these horses? You don't need them for war. Right? He couldn't even fight with them if he wanted to. He didn't have enough horsemen for all these horses. So the Radak says that this was purely for kavod. He says this great number of horses was for kavod. And listen, the king travels, he goes with his entourage. You know, look at all the horses that travel with him. This is a very imposing sight to see Shlomo with all of his horses, you know, traveling with him. So that's how the Radak understands. And according to the Radak says this is not really so kosher in light of the Pasuk of Lo Yaber Lo Susim. The whole thing was for his kavod. You know, king doesn't need so many horses. Well, he certainly was. Yeah, but there's backup and backup. I mean, how much backup do you need, right? Yeah. All the Mefarshim point out, and I'll just mention it very quickly, that if you look in Divrei Hayomim, remember, there's a lot of overlap between Shmuel and Malachim and Divrei Hayomim. So they say, if you look in Divrei Hayomim, the number that's given is 4,000 and not 40. So what's the discrepancy? So all the Mefarshim give different possible explanations. Why 4 or 40? The Malbim says something very, to me, very logical. And the Malbim says that 4,000, that was like a normal number for a king to use, right? Now, to us, that sounds like an incredible number of forces. But for a king to use 4,000, that's reasonable. That's reasonable. That was what he had personally. The additional 36,000, that was to instill fear in the other nations. So the 4,000, that was for his personal use. Maybe that was not a violation of Lo Yabir Lo Sustim. 4,000 would be okay. The 36,000 additional horses, that was to instill fear. That's how the Malbim understands. Okay. Now again, as we mentioned, all of these things had to be fed, right? Not just the people, but the horses also. So you remember we talked in the last parak Dalet about the Nitzavim. The Nitzavim were the officers. These were the people appointed to oversee the food situation, right? For the king and his and all of his people and all of his horses. The eighth kolakarev el shulchan hamelach Shlomo, and all those that came and approached the table of Shlomo Hamelach, ish chacha lo ya'adru davar, and every not every man, right? But every we learned every group, every geographic location was responsible for a month, and either this means that they never delayed. Every group was responsible for their month. They always supplied that month's food on time properly. Some say they never left anything out, but that's what it means. Now, who are these? Number one, who are these called? Karev el Shulchan HaMelech. So the Tzuzah Sabbat says this refers to non-Jews, because in addition to all of the Jews that were with him and all of his cabinet and staff and all of these people, he says there were many non-Jews who came to visit. They came to meet with Shlomo. They came to see Shlomo. They came to hear Shlomo. Right? There were always many visitors there, and these visitors had to be fed. Who was feeding all these visitors? They came to see the king. So they were supported by they were fed by the king.
50,000 people. It was everybody together, the same people. It's not
correct. The Mitzvah Sabbat is adding here that it wasn't just Jews. I mean, you shouldn't think
more than 60,000.
Oh, I don't know exactly. I mean, it doesn't give a number here. So maybe this was included in the 60,000. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Now, the Radak asks the obvious question. Didn't we say all this already? In the last track, we went through this whole thing. We talked about the needs of him and how they support. Why are we mentioning this again here? Right? We mentioned it earlier. So he says, maybe it's just to add the visitors. We didn't talk about the visitors in the last parak. Maybe it's to add the visitors. And maybe to add the animals. We didn't really focus on the animals too much. So maybe that's why it's added. But otherwise, it's challenging. You know, why is this mentioned? We already said this. Okay, Pasuk Ches. V'hasa'orim v'hateven lasusim, as we mentioned, just like the people needed food, so too the animals needed food. They needed barley. They needed straw for the horses. V'la rochesh. Now, what's rochesh? So he says either rochesh is some other type of animal, says the Radak. Maybe it's referring to mules, right? Some of the horses may have had, you know, children. They may have had mules as children. Okay. Yaviyu el ha-makom asher yihyeh sham ish k'mishpata. Now, here the Mefarshim point out that the groups of people that were supporting the king and the animals for that month, they also had to deliver the food. It wasn't just enough that they would send it. They had to deliver the food to the king and to the animals, wherever the animals were. The animals weren't always in the same place at the same time. Maybe some of the animals were here, some of the animals were there. So they had to be delivered. So they went and delivered the food.
Rabbi.
Yes.
The Imam Loa says the Rakash is the regular horses and the very swift horses.
Aha, interesting. Okay. Swift horses. Okay, nice interpretation. Yes. Vayitein Elokim Chachma LiShlomo. Okay, now we're going back to Shlomo's Chachma. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave wisdom to Shlomo. Usevuna Harbe Me'od. He gave a great deal of Tevuna. So we have Chachma and Tevuna. We'll have to see in a minute what the difference is. V'rochav Lev Kachol. He had a wide heart, like the sea, like the sand. Asher Asfas Hayom, which is by the seashore. Okay, now what does this mean exactly? So, first of all, the Malbim says, what's the difference between Chachma and Tevuna? So he explains in shorthand, he doesn't explain, he says, I discussed this already, I think he says, check out what I wrote in, I think in Mishlei, he says, that I discussed this at length, the difference between Chachma and Tevuna. But he said Chachma is the knowledge of all of the things that distinguish between good and evil. Okay, that's Chachma. What's Tevuna? Tevuna, he says, everything that distinguishes between MS and Sheker, right? Truth and falsehood. So truth and falsehood, figuring that out is Tevuna, and good and evil, that's Chachma. Okay, that's what the Malbim says. Keep that, put that in your back pocket in case you encounter these terms again. You'll know what he says. Now, what's this? You know, why are we describing this? Rochav Leiv Kachol Asher Astas Hayom. He's got a wide heart like the sand upon the seashore. What does this all mean? So the Radak says that it means that just like the sand is so numerous, right? So numerous, so too, the Radak says he had access to all types of Chachma. The Chachma that Shlomo was granted was all-encompassing, everything. He knew everything. He knew everything, okay? And he quotes Chazal, who say that just like the sand, another interpretation of why it's like Chol, that just like the sand is a barrier between the water and the land, so too, he says, Shlomo's Chachma served as a barrier. Shlomo's Chachma protected him. He was able to accomplish all that he accomplished, and he wasn't hurt, he wasn't injured, things didn't faze him because of all of this Chachma that served as that barrier. Pasuk Yud, Vateirev Chachma Shlomo Mechachmas Kol B'nei Kedem U'Mikol Chachmas Mitzrayim. Now, says the Pasuk, there were other types of Chachma out there. B'nei Kedem, what kind of Chachma did they have? So Rashi says B'nei Kedem had Chachma, they understood the Mazalos. Shlomo knew more than them about the Mazalos. Right? The Radak says that the B'nei Kedem understood the language of the birds. Shlomo knew more than them about the language of the birds. What was the Chachma of Mitzrayim? He says, what do we find in the time, in the story, in Sefer Shmos? What do we find? The Hartumim. Right? They were sorcerers. Magic, black magic. Shlomo knew more than them about that Chachma, whatever that Chachma is, of sorcery, of black magic. Mitzudas Tovitz said also they were scientists, right? They were chemists in Mitzrayim. They were experts in science. Shlomo knew more than them, right? All these Chachmos that all the other nations excelled in and they were known for, Shlomo knew more. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayechkam Mikol Ha'odam, he was wiser than all other people. May Eson Ha'ezrachi, the Haman, the Chalkol, the Darda, B'nei Machol, Ahishmo B'chol Agoyim Saviv. And his name became very, very famous, widely known among all the other nations around. Now, who were all these people? So, Pashto Pshat, the Mitzudas Tovitz says, these were very wise people. These were known as the Chachamim of that generation, and he was wiser than all of them. Rashi, interestingly, says that they were the sons of Zerach ben Yehuda. Rashi also quotes another interpretation that you find some of their names in Tehillim. So Rashi suggests maybe they were Leviim, maybe they were some of the Meshorim, the ones they were composers. These were experts in music, right? They were experts in the Chachma of music, and Shlomo knew more than them about music also. He quotes a fascinating Medrash Rashi that all of these names actually refer to other things. So he says, for example, Mikol Ha'adam refers to Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon. And whatever Chachma Adam Arishon had, the Radak says the Adam Arishon's Chachma was because he was able to name all of the animals. How did he figure out the names of all the animals? It wasn't random. Right? The names, we know names relate to the essence of something or someone. So Adam Arishon had the Chachma to understand the animals and to give them the appropriate names based on their tchunos, based on their nature. Shlomo had more Chachma in that than Adam Arishon. Me'eson ha'ezrachi, who do we know that's referred to as Eson? Eitan, right? Avram Avinu. That he had more Chachma than Avram Avinu. Haman, he says, refers to Moshe. He had more Chachma than Moshe. I don't know why Haman refers to Moshe, but Haman refers to Moshe, he says. Chalkol refers to Yosef. That, I think, is because Yosef was Mechalkel. He sustained Mitzrayim. Yosef had, he was an economics whiz, Yosef, right? Shlomo had more Chachma than him. Darda but he says refers to the generation of the Midbar. Shlomo had more chachma than the entire generation of the Midbar. And Machol, he says also, B'nai Machol, he says it calls Darda B'nai Machol. It's the generation of the Midbar that was B'nai Machol, meaning from the language of Mechila, they were forgiven for the Chet Ha'ega. Okay, so this is all what he says. Now, the Malbim has one fascinating point here, and he says that he quotes the Abarbanel. And he says the Abarbanel develops, why, in what way was Shlomo's Chachma different? Right, we see clearly from these psukim that Shlomo's Chachma was qualitatively different than everyone else who lived at that time and maybe for all time. What was so different about his Chachma? So he says like this, fascinating. He says that most people's Chachma, a person can be born very wise. You can be born with, you know, a smart person, intelligent person. But you're not born with wisdom. You're not born with knowledge. How do you develop the knowledge? How do wise people, how did Einstein, he was a very smart guy. He wasn't born knowing all these theories when he was a kid. He developed them. How did he develop them? He used his intellect to understand things. And then he experimented, he thought, he read, and he starts putting things together, trying new things. And that's how he learns more and more. That's how a normal person, a very intelligent person, develops chachma. So says the Abarbanel, chachma is usually a gradual process. Chachma is dependent on many other factors, experimentation, my senses, the things that I take in, and I use all of that to develop more chachma. And it's also prone to error. With all of the great things that Einstein, accomplished, he made mistakes. Every wise person makes mistakes, right? That's what experimentation is all about. He says Shlomo HaMelech was so qualitatively different because Shlomo's wisdom was like that. Instantaneously, Shlomo had all the wisdom. It wasn't gradual. He didn't have to build it. It just was there. As soon as HaKadosh Baruch Hu granted it to him, boom, it was all in his head. And it was perfect because it wasn't prone to any error. Error is when you have to figure things out. When you're building the wisdom, you're growing the wisdom, trial and error. Shlomo didn't have to build his wisdom. He didn't have to grow his wisdom. His wisdom was immediate. And that's why it was perfect. It was immediate. Wasn't prone to error. And he understood everything. And he says that's also why, most people, they're limited to the things that they can sense, right? A scientist can do experiments and he can grow in his wisdom based on the experiments that he does. But that's based on the things that he can sense. Shlomo, it was even things that he couldn't sense. He understood things that there was no way to measure them. There was no way to experiment with them. His chachma was on a completely different level, qualitatively different. It wasn't just, that he was very smart. It was a qualitatively different chachma than anyone else had ever experienced or will ever experience. Because we're all limited to the chachma that we can develop gradually with the kalim that we have, using the senses that we have and the information that we have at our disposal. At our disposal. That wasn't Shlomo. That was the nature of his chachma. We'll get there. Very good. Okay. Now, pasuk yudbeis. Vayidaber shloshes alofim mashal. Now we begin to talk about what Shlomo produced. And he spoke 3,000 mishalim. 3,000 mishalim. Vayishiro chamishava aleph. And he composed songs, poems, 1,005. Now, all of the mafarshim say here, where are all these things? Talking about 3,000 mishalim of Shlomo. I mean, we know Shlomo wrote Mishlei. You don't find 3,000 mishalim in Mishlei, right? Songs, poems of Shlomo. Where are they? Right. So all the mafarshim here struggle with this. We don't have any of these things. Where are all these things? So many of the mafarshim, the Radak and the Mitzudas David, fascinating. They say that, first of all, before we get to that, so Aaron asked before, what about Ruach HaKodesh? So the Malbim says, that's why this pasuk comes now. Because the previous pasuk was talking about all his chacham, right? This pasuk is talking about the Ruach HaKodesh. He also had Ruach HaKodesh, and with that Ruach HaKodesh, he was able to write all of these mishalim, all of these shiros. He was able to write all of these things. Now, what happened to them? Right? Where are all these things? Says the Radak, we lost them. Shlomo wrote all of these things. He wrote 3,000 Mishalim. He wrote 1,005 Ashiros. He wrote all of these things. But we lost them. He says, in fact, you look through Tanakh, you find maximum 800 or so psukim that Shlomo spoke. Max, 800. Right? It's the Red Ox says almost 800. Right? I guess he counted them. Right? Not even anywhere near 3,000. Right? Anywhere near 3,000. So he says, Pashut Pshat is that these were books and Sfarim that he wrote, and we lost them when we went into Golos. He says, we lost them when we went into Golos, and the Mitzvah HaSavit says the same thing. Fascinating. The Mitzvah HaSavit said, what happened? We went into Golos, and the Goyim found them. We lost the Sfarim that Shlomo HaMelech wrote, and the Goyim found them. The Mitzvah HaSavit says that much of the Chachma that comes from the Goyim really stems from Shlomo HaMelech. And these were things that Shlomo HaMelech wrote that were lost. We left. The Goyim found them, and they took them as their own. And then they said, you know, they came up, this look, Chidushim. Meanwhile, Shlomo HaMelech. All comes from Shlomo HaMelech. Fascinating. That's how the Mitzvah David describes it. Good question, but I think that's because those are the ones that we have. We don't have Shlomo songs. We don't have Shlomo's talks, right? So the ones we have are from David. Ne'im Zmiros Yisrael, right? That's what we have. Okay. Another medrash that Radak says, he says, you could say that maybe, if you look at the 800 or so psukim that Shlomo Melech wrote, it could be that each one of those really has deeper layers of meaning, and each one might have two or three different deeper layers of meaning. And that's the 3,000. We didn't lose anything. We have it all. But it's all, you know, hidden within the actual psukim that Shlomo HaMelech said. That's another interpretation. A third interpretation is that this is really referring to the things that we do have that he wrote. The things that we do have. Rashi says that it says in Sefer Mishlei three times, Mishlei Shlomo. So that's the 3,000. It's referring to the three times it says Mishlei Shlomo in Sefer Mishlei. The Malbim also says that Sefer Mishlei can be broken down into three sections, right? Presumably he's referring to what Rashi is referring to also. Okay, so maybe that's the three, so to speak. And Rashi says, you add Shirashirim plus Koheles, that's the five. The Malbim says a little bit differently. He says Shirashirim can be broken down into five songs. Okay, so the five Chamisha, the Shiro Chamisha is Shirashirim, right? So again, the Shloshes Alofim Moshal, that's Mishlei. The Shiro Chamisha is referring to Shirashirim. And he says the sixth song in Shirashirim is Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, mentions the word Elef several times, and that's the Va'alef. That's referring to the sixth song of Shir HaShirim. So that's another way of understanding this pasuk, that we're not talking about things that were lost. These are references to the things that he wrote that we do have. Okay, so there are three different interpretations how to understand this pasuk. Either there were actually many things that Shlomo wrote down that we lost, or These are references to the things that he wrote that we do have, Shir HaShirim, Koheles, Mishlei. Or you could say that there are many, many layers of meaning, you know, beneath that which he wrote, and that's what this pasuk is referring to. Okay, pasuk Yud Gimel. Shlomo Melech was not just a chacham and didn't just have Ruach HaKodesh about all of these things, Mishalim and Shiros and all these things. Vayidaber al ha'etzim. He knew science, everything. From the great tall cedar tree until the lowly hyssop. Asher yotzei bakir, which comes out of the wall. Vayidaber ala behema, v'ala of, v'ala remes, v'ala dogim. He spoke and wrote about all these animals. Animals, of, remes, dogim. He knew about everything. Mitzudas David says, he knew about the science and the nature of the trees. He knew about all these things. And he wrote. And again, according to the Mitzvah Sefer, we lost all these. He wrote science books. We lost all the science. And maybe the Goyim found it and made it their own. The Malbim says Remes includes amphibians. He writes amphibian. aleph mem like amphibian and the and other types of insects. Now the Radak here says that this is not just referring to science, this pasuk, right? Many of the Mefarshim of the David, the Malbim, seem to say it's referring to science. The Radak is not referring to the science, but he says it's referring to questions in Torah about these things. So, for example, why does the Metzora use the great Erez, the cedar, as well as the Azov in his Tahara process? Why? So Chazal tell us. Why does he use that? Because he was a Baal Gaiva, he spoke Lashon Hara, he made himself tall like a cedar. He has to lower himself like a hyssop, like an azov, in order to do tshuva and be metayer himself. That comes from Shlomo HaMelech. Okay, that's the error to the azov. He talks about the behema and the oath. Why is it that a behema has two simanim of kashrus? An oath only has one simon of kashrus. Right? That's something that Shlomo explained. He says that there was one pasuk that implies that birds were created from the earth, another pasuk that implies they were created from the mayim. They were really created from the swamp, which is like the earth and the mayim together. Okay, another pasuk, another question: why is one chayav for trapping and injuring the eight shrutzim, the shmona shrutzim mentioned in the Torah, and not the other shrutzim? The answer is because they have ore, they have skin. That's why that was Shlomo's chiddush. Another one: why is it that animals and birds require shchita? How does the pasuk end? The ala dogim. Dogim do not require shchita. Why not? That again, Shlomo. All these kind of things. That's how the Radak understands this pasuk. This is all referring to not the science of these animals, but the peculiarities in Torah of these animals. And Shlomo was the one who explained all of these things. Okay, last two psukim. Last pasuk of the night. We'll start with pasuk Gedalit. Vayavo'u mikol ha'amim lishmoa eschoch ma Shlomo me'ezko malchei ha'aretz asher shomu eschoch maso. Everyone came to hear him. Right? Shlomo Melech was so amazing and so astounding to people that everyone came to hear him. Here was Droshus. The Goyim came to hear him. Everyone. They all came to hear him. All the Melachim, all the kings from all the places came to hear about Shlomo. And in fact, the Radak says that when the kings got back, right, they came to hear Shlomo. When they returned home, they had a gathering. All the people in their nations came to hear. What did Shlomo say? Right? What did Shlomo say? And all of them also that all of the other wise men, right? Once the kings heard and they spread the word, all of the other wise men came to hear exactly what happened. The Malbim says here there's also a hint in this pasuk to Koheles. We didn't really talk too much about Koheles. We talked about Mishlei, Shir Hashirim. What about Koheles? So he says this pasuk is hinting to Koheles. How was Koheles taught? Hakel. Koheles was taught when everybody came together. This is referring to Koheles, and Koheles was the lesson. Like you look at Koheles, it's a lesson about life, about how to live in this world. So Koheles was a lesson for all of these kings and all of the lay people, how to live in this world, how to run society. That was Shlomo Melech's lesson. Okay, this week we finished about Shlomo and about his Chachma. Next week, Yemir Tzashem, we'll learn about one of these kings by the name of Hiram Melech Tzor, who was very fascinated and enamored with Shlomo, and he wanted to help out, and he actually lays the groundwork for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. It's Hashem next week. Okay, Shkoyach. Thank you for coming. Good night, Aaron. Good night.
Good night, Rabbi. Thank you.